to this day, the technique itself has not necessarily evolved per se, other than the technology. So the same skill sets has been passed on essentially through the best part of close to 400 years.
Hello, I'm Carol Annett from Country and Townhouse magazine. Welcome to the House Guest podcast, where I chat with experts from the world of interior design and decoration, the people behind the houses, hotels, shops and brands you see in glossy magazines like ours. And if you're doing up your own home, hopefully you'll pick up some tips for yourself.
Founded in 1914, L'Olièvre Paris is renowned for sophisticated fabrics, wall coverings, rugs, and accessories. It's an absolute pleasure today to be joined by Vincent Panettiere, who is in charge of L'Olièvre UK. Welcome, Vincent. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Carol. Thanks for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Now, one of the things that I love about L'Olièvre is that it has such a fantastic history, and in fact still weaves in the same place, Lyon, that it's done for over 400 years. Tell me, how long have you been with the company?
I've been with the company for just under 2 years, having had the rest of my career in fabric. So I'm very much a fabric person through and through.
And what is it about the L'Olièvre brand that really gets you excited?
Well, it's the link between the contemporary creation, where Paris holds a very strong position, with historic interiors led by various French periods of style, namely starting in the 1700s, late 1600s even. So it's a fascinating world of savoir-faire, reproduction and contemporary creations. That's all under one roof, which is quite rare in our industry these days.
And when it comes to the fabrics, it's always been for interiors, so that heavyweight jacquards and linens and that kind of thing, rather than the finer fabrics for fashion labels.
Lately, very much so. Even if you know, to this day, we still get involved with the costume industry for movie productions. So in the era of COVID, for example, we've had a lot of really interesting projects with Netflix productions. But it is very much a very small part of our business. Today, we're very much a furnishing brand. But historically, silk weaving to the First World War, roughly speaking, was still very much on both sides. Costumes and dresses were also using fine silks that were used for wooling, for example, and so on. So there is a joint history between the two.
So tell me about the actual weaving techniques and how the looms would have changed from when it first started.
Well, one of the key weaving technique of today and also that made its name as a loom is the jacquard loom, invented by Monsieur Jacquard in Lyon region. And we're looking at mid-18th century, 1750.
And jacquard is when you have a design woven within the fabric, which is still in the same color and the same material, but it gives you a pattern.
Very much so. So you have three big types. You have the printed fabrics, the embroidered fabrics, and then the weaves. And in the weaves family, the most prominent quality is the jacquard quality, whereby you weave within the cloth your patterns, you see, with your warp and your weft. But it is, in a nutshell, the difference. And this technique was developed by Monsieur Jacquard. And what I find really fascinating, and I can't say it was the reason why I moved, but it explains a lot of things of what L'Olièvre is today. But it's Tassinerie and Châtel, which was then led by Monsieur Camille Pernon, was one of Monsieur Jacquard's first customers when he first developed and invented that loom, which at that time was mechanical, but heavily manually operated, if you want. So we're looking at pre-steam engine, pre-first industrial revolution. He was looking for customers to roll out and to be successful as an inventor. He had invented other things prior to that. And Tassinerie and Châtel was one of their first clients. So it's, to this day, the technique itself has not necessarily evolved per se, other than the technology. The technology is heavily automatized today, is computer assisted heavily. So we're far away from the hand operation that was seen in those huge ateliers where you had hundreds of looms working under one roof to furnish places like Versailles and other empire palaces in Europe.
And actually, they Lelièvre now own Tassinari and Châtel.
That's right. Yeah. It was acquired by Patrick Lelièvre, so third generation, and the father of the current CEO, Emmanuel, in the 90s. At a time when silk weaving was having some difficulties due to partly some budget restrictions from the French state, because that side of weaving, silk weaving in France, is heavily so supported by French states that pours a lot of money into chateaus, Versailles, Fontainebleau, and so on. So it was in a fragile state, and the company rescued it at that time, and since are turning around and to still fascinating them today, stronger than ever.
Yeah, amazing too that it's has remained in the same family. I mean, that's quite extraordinary.
It has. If you trace it back to the 1680s, when it was first referred in the Ledger of Versailles as a golden and silver thread weaver, it has changed name three times, but essentially the history is traced back very clearly up to that point. So the same skill set has been passed on essentially through the best part of close to 400 years. So it's quite fascinating.
And actually, if you think about those incredibly sumptuous, beautiful fabrics that you would see in Versailles or in palaces, and like you say, in chateau, that's the kind of quality of cloth that we're talking about. It's a very high-end product. And what I love about it is that, you know, when you look at your contemporary collections, you have a new one coming out shortly where you've collaborated with Maison Lalou. You know, actually, you could combine those, although they're very contemporary, they're the kind of patterns that you could put into a situation like Versailles and sort of mix it up with the old and the new, which I think is what's been so clever about Lelièvre.
Absolutely. And funny enough, a lot of those patterns, often, you see those geometric patterns that made Maison Lalou very strong and prominent as a design house through the best part of the 20th century, originating back to the background motifs that you were sometimes seeing in some beautiful brocatelles from the 18th century and 19th century. But as part of a wider composition, and I suppose the savoir-faire is kind of the same, even though we're not using silk with this collection. It's still an intricate design that had to be interpreted and translated into a modern fabric for different uses. Because let's not forget that silk weaving, as beautiful and precious as it is not a performance fabric per se. So it's not a very family friendly, you know, you're not going to put a fine silk on your sofa and having kids jumping around, and because it is not very practical. So you have to obviously look at this differently. But it's been a very interesting journey with Maison Lalou, which in many ways has played a very big part in the French design history, more contemporary one, an empire in itself through the best part of the 20th century.
And Lelièvre was quite a pioneer when it comes to collaborating, because were you not one of the first design houses to move into the fashion world, collaborating with designers?
I suppose being in Paris at the heart of the fashion world, or one of the main hearts of the fashion world, this was something that was going to happen at some point. But it's true that Patrick Lelièvre in the early 2000s had seen an opportunity to link up both worlds, and started in that period a collaboration and a license at the time with Kenzo, this recently departed legendary designer was at its peak. It was the golden years of Kenzo, and so we introduced this very unique language to the design world through finishing fabrics. And then the same with Sonia Riquel. It was the opposite. It was Sonia Riquel first and Kenzo after. And yeah, it was it took everyone by surprise, but it was extremely, extremely relevant, because fashion and design always been intimately linked. But it's from that period of time where actually direct links were made, and the similar fan bases, dare I say, could then have their handbags and their wardrobes filled with beautiful designer pieces, as well as their sofas and living rooms and so on. So it was offering sort of a 360 lifestyle option to an ever loyal fan base for some of the greatest labels at the time.
So what is the process for a new collection or a new collaboration? How does it work? Are you involved in that process?
On a day-to-day, no. However, being in the front line out with some of the most distinguished designers here and sometimes in Paris, traveling back and forth, we are the eyes and ears also of our studio. So we do get involved, but there is an element that needs to remain within the remit of the creative director, because certain notions of style do not have to be dictated by the market and needs to be also organic and fits the brand's origin and previous collections and so on. So it's a constant dialogue, I suppose.
And with the new collection where you've collaborated with Lulu, there's a real kind of 70s. For me, it was a kind of 70s with a bit of Art Deco. I almost wanted to go and put my flares on at one point, because there's that gorgeous, all the browns and the pumpkin and with the cream, in quite bold geometrics, but with a lovely sort of Art Deco feel, maybe with the curve of a fan or something. It's very, right. Very clever, really clever.
We called it this collection retrospective because the archives of Lulu are enormous, and it's a very interesting yet tragic story that is thanks to Alexia starting to write a new part to their history. But back in, from the glorious period between the two world wars up until the late 70s, Maison Lulu was very much a design superpower in the French design world, with resonating as far as New York, where the liners were traveling to, the great ocean liners like the France, to plenty of embassies and royal palaces around the world. And it was one of the first, I would say, editors, in the sense that they were 360, they were both a design studio as well as editing furniture, as well as rugs and so on. It was the first example of what many companies have done since, a very successful 360 design house, from design offering design service, as well as a variety of other products within it.
And you also did a collaboration with Safe Furniture. Tell us about that, because that was really clever. You had a little pop-up in London where you had used I can't remember the name of the stylist who put it together, but it was so clever, the way it sort of blocks of different fabrics in sort of lime, and you clashed them together. It was just brilliant.
It's been a very interesting project with Pablo, the founder and owner, and his wife, Amalia. When I joined Lulu, I found it sometimes fascinating, sometimes difficult in a way to be able to mix both beautiful historic side of the business with fantastic products, and under the same brand, a very contemporary product. It's always a difficult exercise for any brand, and we have competitors who have the same challenge in a way, as well as the same strength. And so this collaboration was very much about how we can marry very contemporary furniture design with historic fabrics. So we gave them various options of fabrics to choose from, and together they came up with this really interesting concept of courtship, very much inspired by the then courtship of the aristocratic era in France, where, in the royal circles and aristocratic circles, where both parties do enter into a charming game. And
I love the way you're making it sound very romantic, but basically you're talking about everyone sleeping together.
I've got a romantic side to myself, and I have to pose it sometime, I suppose. That's what my embarrassed wife sometimes tells me. But it was definitely trying to marry both. And the result was really good, because it's an unusual set of colors and motifs and patterns around a very contemporary collection designed by Ini Archibong, an Algerian-American Swiss designer, a very colorful character, who did extremely minimalist furniture. So it's a space that is currently on transit to Shanghai after having been in London all summer and through the design festival with great feedback from clients. And it's a very proud. You can still see it on our Instagram feed and Say Collections feed as well.
Actually, you kind of really sort of feel like you hit the kind of zeitgeist, because we were all absorbed by Bridgerton and I suppose to a certain extent The Crown, and it's really that kind of era, particularly the Bridgerton era. You said that Lelièvre was involved with some Netflix programs. Was Bridgerton one of the programs they helped with the interiors?
Possibly. Indeed, yeah. We did. We're bound by a bit of confidentiality, but some of those great drama productions very much came to us. And it's been quite fascinating to see it in the flesh when the series were out on Netflix and so on.
So looking to the future then, Vincent, where do you see Lelièvre going from here?
It's very much a journey that we are taking. A company like Lelièvre has enormous archives. And part of that journey is to tap into it more, and at the same time continuing developing interesting qualities in-house in our own mill. We're one of the last and few fabric editors of this world that also have their own production sites. We're only three or four of the main international brands between the main European countries or even the US to have that production facilities. And with COVID, we've seen a resurgence of the made local. It was already a trend prior to that, but even more so since. And with the recent sort of logistical issues linked to Brexit, also global maritime transportation, having product made in France has really helped us. And we are able to also to develop a level of quality that is difficult to find outside of Europe, certainly, and even more outside of France or Italy. So it's continuing the work of contemporary creation, celebrating our beautiful past and archives, as well as continuing a lot of research and development into new weaves, new qualities, and continuing to feed the design world that is ever hungrier with new things.
Yeah, I love that, the way you're describing it, protecting the past and looking to the future and looking after those hungry interior designers.
And I think it's more difficult than ever because, and so social demographics, it's a complex market to work with these days, where what I call the different tribes of design have their own key go-to names. They have their flag bearers, you know, with designers, with brands. And you have to, as a 360 fabric editor offering various styles, various qualities at different price points, it is a complex and really fun exercise. In places like London or Paris, New York, it's quite fascinating the different conversation that we can be having with different groups of designers, different generations. And that really makes our job really, really exciting. My romantic side always links our work of cloth merchants of today to that of our forefathers in sort of 1700s. There's a very interesting book, I think it's with Faden, which is showing a silk merchant catalogue of the late 1700s. And there were men who were representing mills from Lyon in particular, but also the Como district north of Italy, and visiting the greatest houses of Europe at the time, and in particular here in the UK. And opening this book is quite fascinating to see how vibrant the colors are, how relevant the designs of then, an era where we see that we discover and know through the National Gallery and Tate Britain and so on through master's paintings, actually translates, are very, very relevant and translate beautifully to this day. And so we continue that tradition of silk and fabric merchants in a very different way today. But yeah, I quite like that link to the past. There's something that hasn't really changed. You know, it's a sample, it's a discussion, it's network, it's
a cup of coffee.
Yeah, cup of coffee, cup of tea. And it's fun.
Yeah. Or maybe fun. Maybe even a glass of wine, who knows?
A glass of claret?
Maybe a glass of claret. Oh, Vincent, thank you so much for taking us through a little romp through the history of Lelièvre. It's been fascinating. Thank you very much indeed.
My pleasure, Carol. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to House Guest from Country and Townhouse magazine with me, Carol Annett. In the meantime, you can follow me on Instagram at Carol W. Annett and keep up to date on all the podcast news and show notes online at countryandtownhouse.co.uk/podcast.